Hey, Paulina.
Hey, Lars.
How are you doing?
I'm great. I'm sitting right next to you in Copenhagen.
Exactly. We're sitting in the same studio for once.
Yes.
In my home. And you are getting so surprised that the room actually is compared to how it looks on camera.
On camera, yeah. It looks gigantic on camera. And it's actually really cozy. I like it.
Busted.
Good setup.
So what's been going on for last week?
Oh, I wanted to tell you, I had the weirdest situation last Thursday because we had a complete power outage for 3 hours. And I mean, I lived in Syria, mm-hmm. and there it was normal. There was everyday life that you wouldn't have any power for an hour or so mm-hmm. every day. But I was really surprised that in Germany in this day and age, you can have such a power outage. And there's 10,000 households. And for 3 hours, there were no traffic lights, no lights at all, no water, because the water needs power to run it up the pipes, right? No internet, because even though the phone masts were down, I didn't even have mobile internet for 3 hours, and I felt so disconnected. It was really scary, to be honest, because I couldn't even research what was going on. It was like living in the Middle Ages, and it was really scary, and for me personally, because and also super annoying, because I had 3 customer calls and I had no way of reaching them to let them know that that the meeting couldn't take place, right? I couldn't call them.
Couldn't email them.
I couldn't email them. I couldn't WhatsApp them. I couldn't Slack them. I had no way of reaching out to them. And I actually ended up sending my co-founder, and I also didn't know how long this was going to last, right? But I ended up sending my co-founder SMS. And I don't think I've sent SMS in the past 5 years. And it took 20 minutes to go out. 20 bloody minutes. And by that time, the first meeting was almost over. But he then reached out to the customers and let them know. Right. And it was so bizarre, because you don't realize how dependent you are on power. And when I realized, okay, I don't have internet, there's no way I'm gonna get to work anytime soon, it's like, okay, I'll be productive. I'll do the laundry. No, you're not.
You can't do anything.
Then I was like, okay, then I'll at least have a nice cup of tea.
Nope,
you're not.
you can't do anything.
You can't do anything. You can't do anything except read or sleep, which is what I ended up doing. Because I was like, okay, if I can't do anything, I might just as well get the rest.
Then go to sleep. You've never been so rested in your whole life.
I was really anxious, because I was like, I have so much work to do. And now I'm missing out on those meetings that I'll have to reschedule. And I can't do anything else, because obviously all of my work is cloud-based. So I couldn't access my Notion pages. I couldn't access my emails. I couldn't do anything. And
we don't realize it before it happens,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, we really don't.
Story from everyday life.
Hopefully not every day.
Oh, okay. Okay, are you ready for today's episode?
Absolutely.
Perfect. Let's do it. Welcome, everybody, to Cultures from Hell. My name is Lars, and today we are diving into something every team faces: conflict. Okay, let's do this. Welcome to Cultures from Hell. My name is Lars, and today we are diving into something every team faces: conflict, disagreements. God. Welcome to Cultures from Hell. My name is Lars, and today we are diving into something every team faces: conflict. Disagreements are inevitable, but repair isn't. My guest today, live in studio, is Paulina from the Culture Code Foundation. Paulina, welcome so much to Copenhagen and in the studio.
Thank you, Lars. It's amazing to be here.
How is it to be in Copenhagen?
I mean, it's one of my favorite cities, so I love to be here. And I'm super lucky because it's amazing weather out there. So, which is not always the case, to be honest.
This is the Nordics.
Yes, and it's autumn in the Nordics. But I've been really lucky for 4 days. I've seen only sun.
Even though it is really windy.
Yeah.
I would admit it's really windy these days.
Yeah, it is. But I don't mind the wind.
No, me neither.
As long as it's not rainy, which I've seen a lot of in Copenhagen.
So, Paulina, let's start by setting the stage for this episode here. You often say conflict is inevitable, but repair is treated as optional. Why do so many teams skip the repair step?
Because repairing requires processing uncomfortable emotions and uncomfortable conversations.
Mm-hmm.
And that is just something that most people tend to avoid. I don't think we only see this in companies. I think we also see this in all sorts of relationships, that people try to avoid having the hard conversations. Mm. And especially in the work life, we tend to celebrate performance rather than vulnerability. And so when conflict happens, teams usually have the silent hope that over time it will just disappear.
Mm-hmm.
And from my experience, and I think that's not just a personal experience, time doesn't heal those kind of things. It usually hides the resentment, and then it will boil up at a later stage with even more power behind it.
What first brought you to study like team conflict and the repair part as well?
Well, so for me, the team conflict part is crucial when it comes to working with leaders or with team success, because I've seen very, very successful team handle conflict really well. And I've seen dysfunctional teams that are incapable of really dealing with conflict. And it comes around. What goes around comes around over and over and over again. And I have two short instances that maybe also really paint a nice picture of it.
Uh-huh.
And the first one was a remote startup that I was working with, and where no one addressed tension. So you could feel it. Disclaimer, I'm an empath, so I feel tension really easily and early on. And I saw a senior person actually really disconnect after a conflict. He really withdrew himself. He went silent, and he within months he actually left the company. So there was just one conflict that completely unraveled his reality in that workplace.
Uh-huh.
And actually made him leave. And then everyone said, "Well, that's a resourcing issue." La 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 la. So you just making up excuses for what had happened. Nobody was really addressing that this had happened because of conflict. So not only the conflict was basically hidden twice, once in the moment it started, and then even it was even ignored as a reason why a person left the company.
Uh-huh.
And so there was one extreme example. And I've also seen the other side. So, for example, I've seen CEOs, co-CEOs, that were clashing regularly. They were having it out. They were discussing it, and they were upfront about them being very opinionated, having very strong opinions. They were upfront about being set in their ways, but they would always check in every Friday, where they would ask each other, what worked between us this week, what didn't work, what can we do differently next week? And then they actually try to implement that. And so they surface the tension, they actually use it, right? I mean, I've said this before, tension isn't a bad thing. Conflict isn't a bad thing. It's the way you handle the conflict and the way you repair if somebody gets hurt. And it starts obviously with, ideally, you don't have a conflict that's on a personal level, but you have conflict that's on a topic level. Then a conflict then it doesn't need repair because nobody gets hurt. But if people get hurt, then you do need the repair. From my perspective, repair isn't optional if feelings got hurt or if anything got personal.
And I've mentioned my wonderful girlfriend a couple of times here on the show. And I just wanted to do it again because when we have a conflict and we have this thing about, I know this kind of a thing for a lot of people saying that we don't go to bed being angry with each other, and we have the same thing. And I think that the wonderful part about our relationship is that we actually talk about it. So every time we have a conflict, we talk about it. And she always ends up saying that, because I'm the kind of person, I feel guilty when we have a conflict.
Yeah.
And I feel sad afterwards because I don't want those conflicts. But she always looks at me and says, like, the wonderful thing about having conflicts, it actually brings us closer to each other, and it surfaces things about each other or ways of treating things or reacting that we didn't know already. So that actually brings us closer together.
I agree under one condition.
Mm-hmm.
If you manage to repair that conflict.
Oh, yes.
That is the thing, right? Just surfacing it doesn't bring anyone closer.
No, of course not.
So from my experience, if you, and most couples aren't good at this, and in companies it's even worse because you have less to lose, right? Mm-hmm. If you lose a colleague, it doesn't hurt as much as if you lose a partner or a child because you have a bad relationship with them.
Mm-hmm.
But conflict tends to be like broken glass.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't repair the broken glass, or if you don't clear it away, then the broken glass will pile up and pile up and pile up and pile up, and it will become more and more difficult to look across it or to cross that bridge and to reconnect. So conflict per se, on a personal level, actually brings you further apart. The repair is what clears out the rubbish and then brings you closer together.
Yeah, good insights. So how does repair look like in a team setting? And we are not just talking about saying, hey, I'm sorry.
No, exactly. So repair is about intentionally restoring the relational integrity.
Mm-hmm.
So it's exactly not about offering a polite apology, especially if you don't really mean it. If it's like this obligatory, oh, I'm sorry, I fucked it up. I swore again. No, I did it again.
This is your own podcast. You can do whatever you want. Very bad for the algorithm, though.
So a true apology or a true repair, it definitely involves acknowledging the impact. So even if my intent was good, I can acknowledge that what I did or said had a different outcome than, or landed differently than I expected it or intended it to do. I need to give space for feedback. So give you the room to tell me what happened to what my actions ignited within you. So it's not just my narrative, but both of our narratives. And the most important part from my perspective is agreeing to actual change. So not just saying, I'm sorry, but to say, okay, this is, I know that what I said hurt you in that and that way. And because you are important to me, and because it's important to me that our relationship works in, right, as friends, as colleagues, as partners, I I'm going to work on my behavior and this will show up in this or that way.
Mm-hmm.
So being as concrete as possible, obviously, which isn't always possible, but it is just making sure that you have a behavior shift
mm-hmm.
that you actually follow through on, obviously. What I often say is repair is when the actual behavior changes, not just when the tension ends.
Uh-huh. And can you give an example where, let's say, a small thing or a small ritual can completely change the atmosphere?
Yeah. Let me think quickly. So I have seen a team in a startup, a development team, botching a launch.
Uh-huh.
I think we both know that happens.
It happens quite a lot,
which has to do with the fact that it's really, really difficult to predict what kind of issues you're going to run into when shipping a product, right?
Uh-huh.
And in this case, emotions ran really high. There was a lot of pressure on the team. It was a crucial business topic, and there had been layoffs before, so there was a lot of anxiety around not making things on time, getting things ready on time, and then the launch failed or was botched, and then people got really anxious. And what happens if people get really anxious in such a pressure environment? Blame starts to hit the fan. Right, so everyone's finger pointing and it's your mistake, all of that. And then one engineering manager actually completely turned it around by asking the simple question, what am I protecting?
Uh-huh.
And then the conversation turned around. Every person had got like 2 minutes to explain what fear or value they were trying to protect or trying to avoid during the conflict, not pre-launch, but in this conflict. So he shifted perspective from the launch to the conflict itself, which was crucial, and gave everyone space to share their perspective, but turn it back on themselves. So take away the blame moment for others, but really reflect on your own behavior. And that also turned into a moment where people could connect over things because they realized most of them were protecting the same or similar things. So they wanted to protect the quality, or they wanted to protect the speed, or they wanted to avoid conflict with the customer later on. So, and they found moments where they could connect again, mm-hmm. and they took away the blame function, and that was really, really crucial.
And how does let's say language, like specific phrases or script, play into making repair possible?
I believe that language is always crucial in whatever instance, but especially when it comes to conflict, because it can completely make a conflict spiral out of control, or it can build bridges.
Mm-hmm.
And especially it can build a bridge out of shame or out of the shame or guilt instance into the repair, into the reconnection. So it can be a beautiful thing, but that needs, for most people, because who learns how to argue?
Mm-hmm.
Who learns how to do conflict? Who learns without getting personal? It's a crucial skill, but nobody really teaches you that. So we like to help teams find that kind of language that builds those bridges. And you can use questions, for example, like, I realized I didn't show up how I wanted to. Can I try again? So that is one of those bridges, right? Acknowledging my impact, just as I said before, right? That this is important. And then can I do this? Can I have a redo? That's one way. Second way, similar instance, what I meant isn't what landed with you. I'd like to hear your side, your perspective. Again, opening up this room, the space for the other narrative. And the third way that you can do it is I want to understand what impact I had or what my part in this conflict was. I'm open to hearing your side. So very similar things, acknowledging it, and then opening up the discussion or the narrative for the other side. And these open doors, and without approaches like this, people will stay locked in resentment or in silence. And obviously, it's not just this single sentence. It is also really crucial how you react to what is then the other perspective.
Yeah.
If you then say, okay, no, this is complete BS, what you're saying, then you're back in conflict mode, right? So obviously, you need to follow through on, and I always say, be really curious about what's going on in the other person's mind and try to move into their seat, because that is so, so important if you want to actually repair anything.
Yeah. And let's pretend I'm a manager.
Mm-hmm.
I'm managing a group of people and I want to introduce let's call it repair rituals.
Mm-hmm.
What would be a good first step here?
Well, I am a huge fan of the leading with appreciative inquiry, which is a full methodology that I'm not going to teach you now, but it actually comes very, very helpful in those instances. So right after tense meeting, obviously, again, this requires you as a manager to be very reflective and to be very empathetic, to really sense that there is conflict going on. And a conflict that's on a personal level. And then you can stop the meeting right then and there. I would definitely advise it if something like this comes up, stop the original meeting and go into, okay, what's off here? What's happening? Why are we moving in a direction that we don't want to move into? And what strengths can we lean on to do it differently next time? Again, if you go, so you acknowledge that there's something going on, you assess what's been going on, and then you turn it around into, okay, how can we do it differently next time? How can we move away from this? How can we move past it? That's the repair function. And that question reframes a conflict as a learning portal, and shifts again away from the blame game. And the most important thing here is that this question also works in teams that have low trust, because it focuses on strengths and not faults. Yeah, I think we're going to let's dive into this a little bit later.
Yeah,
but I would also definitely say, as a manager, don't make repairs optional. Build it into your retros, into your one-on-ones, into every team meeting, or at least leave space for doing that. Because those systems then create culture. I've spoken about the after action reviews a couple of times already. That can be a great way of bringing this into your structure, into your everyday encounter structure. Because again, conflict per se is a good thing. It is important in order to hear every perspective. It is important to develop constructive, innovative, creative solutions. It is crucial to bringing teams forward, as long as you do it well.
Mm. Let's say I'm part of a team.
Yeah.
We are having a meeting and it comes. Completely blew up. What are three practical scripts that we can start using the next day after this meeting completely blew off?
Mm-hmm. Well, if a meeting completely derails, I think it's important to have a little break, not necessarily do the repair.
That's where I said next day.
Yeah, very good. And then really ask if we could redo yesterday, what would we do differently than from what we did yesterday?
Yeah.
And then in the discussion, you ask when you're an employee, the manager in that discussion then should really focus on making sure that people don't say, well, you need to do this differently and you need to be better in that, but that they stay with themselves in the self-reflective mode, right? The second thing that I would definitely recommend is, and that is something that even as an employee, you don't necessarily need to do this in the whole team, but you can also do it one-on-one, right? Say you and I had a conflict with each other, then either one of us could approach the other one with the question, what do we need to surface here? What's going on underneath that we need to bring out in the open? And you can use the question, is there anything unspoken you and I need to clear to move forward together? And the third thing that can be done is one-word check-in. That, in my perspective, requires quite a high level of trust. But it could be... Lars can just jump on his lap.
Yes, it
does. But it could be a question like, how are you feeling about how we left things yesterday?
Yeah.
And to just answer that in one word. And that obviously is not the full conversation. I want to be clear about this as well, but it can be a good starting point because it opens up. It's a very vulnerable situation, obviously. But if I really understand where you're at, then I might be more willing to really listen to you.
Yeah. And tapping into your experience from the Culture Co Foundation, you've been talking to like multiple companies. Do you notice kind of a cultural difference on how teams handle stuff like this?
Yeah. So obviously there are also national cultural differences.
Yeah.
But what I see more of is a difference in what I call trust maturity. So if you have a team that has been working together either for a very long time or on a very high level of trust, because the manager is really good in creating a very trusting, psychologically safe environment, then you usually don't see hurtful conflicts to begin with. Because the conflicts are done on a topic level, not a personal level. And even if they turn personal, then people trust each other enough and they trust their manager enough to surface that and to really bring it out in the open and do the repair. Usually, even very much unguided, I've seen teams that can just where single people just approach each other and say, okay, I F that up. I'm sorry about it. What do you need from me to repair this?
Yeah.
Right. So I've seen those instances. And that are always moments when I'm like, it's amazing. That's amazing that people manage to do this. And in teams with low trust or low psychological safety, which are very closely interrelated, obviously, then you really need different scaffolding to ensure that this repair is happening.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you bring yourself into a loop that is going to enforce that low trust and low psychological safety.
Yeah. And is there, again, tapping into all your experience and so on, you probably heard it all. So is there a myth about conflict resolution that you want to debunk here on the show?
I don't know if it's a myth anymore, but it's still something that's very much lived, that silence will heal the wound, or that silence will heal the conflict at some point. I've heard so many teams individuals say, "Well, I've moved on, doesn't matter anymore. But just by the tone, you already can tell that they did not move on at all. They just basically moved around it. So
yeah,
we just avoid certain topics altogether because, you know, it's gonna end in conflict. And I've seen this on myself in a personal area. So there are certain people in my life where I know when I go down that road, if we start discussing that topic, it's gonna blow up. So I'm guilty of that. I'm guilty of, from time to time, avoiding certain topics.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't want to get into it. unprocessed conflict will always live in the body of a team. I'm convinced of it. Not just the team, by the way. Also, all of that is also true in personal life. But in teams, then it can show up as tension and Slack threads, so like passive aggressive messaging, comments, weird meetings, unclear roles, all of that can be signs of unprocessed tension and conflict.
And what's the biggest mistake leaders do when they want to like try to, let's do this in quotation marks, force repair in a team?
From my perspective, that they mistake repair for closure. That they just after the first conversation about a mistake for a conflict, for example, they will then let squash it and think, okay, we're done now with this. We've discussed it. Let's just move forward. And that is not actual repair. Because you don't see the behavior change, so you need to reinforce or at least follow through on, does the behavior actually change or does it happen again, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and the second mistake that I see a lot, as so many other topics, if you ask for certain things as a leader, and like, for example, do the repair,
mm-hmm.
but then you don't model it yourself. And you always, 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 no matter what, you set the tone as a leader in a team or in a company, and you always get the culture that you tolerate. So the worst behavior that you tolerate or that you model yourself is the tone you're setting for the team. And if you don't model good conflict resolution or even how to do conflict in a constructive, productive, positive way without going into any personal harm, then that is what's going to replay in your team over and over and over again.
And have you ever yourself been in or ever heard about like a conflict where repair didn't happen? And then what was the consequence of this?
Hundreds of times. There are so many different instances of conflict. It can be about a salary negotiation where people don't see eye to eye. It can be about something individual going on. I think I told the story about two team members where the one completely kidnapped the meeting of the other person,
mm-hmm.
but there the repair did happen, right? And let me think. Maybe from my own personal experience, I did clash with my manager,
mm-hmm.
with my direct manager, on the values that we both stood for. So obviously we stood for different values, and those values clashed. And we both didn't really realize it at the time. And so we froze in that emotional stalemate kind of thing. We were just like, okay, well, you want it this way. I want it this way. What are we going to do? It was like Lucky Luke, yeah, right? Who's going to pull the gun first?
I like that you're bringing Lucky Luke into our podcast. kind of speaks into how old we are, though, yeah. Right? Yeah. Let's not go down that rabbit hole. Please continue.
So instead of naming the rupture that we had both seen or experienced, I compensated by overworking and by just trying to prove my worth in another way. But that didn't work because I didn't trust him anymore. He also didn't, I assume, because we'd never talked about it. I don't know if he didn't trust me anymore. But our relationship got so frayed, at least for me, because I need to be able to, I can't work in an environment where I can't trust my manager. I just can't. And I can also completely understand if you don't want to work with an employee that you don't trust anymore. And so we also decided that we're not going to work together anymore. Unfortunately, what happened in this instance was that because we had such different values, he lied to me about this. So he found a reason not to work with me anymore. He told me some bollocks story about budgets and team setup and whatnot. And so the funny thing is the conflict ended in the way it had started because our values clashed again. Because I don't mind at all if somebody doesn't want to work with me anymore. It's just life. And especially in business, it just happens. And if you don't trust each other or if you just don't have completely different ways of working, that's fine. But just tell me. Just look me in the eye and say, Paulina, we both know this is not working. Can we find a way to figure this out? Or can we find a way to separate in a good way?
Uh-huh.
And instead he lied to me to my face, and that really annoyed me. Because it again went against my values. So that's the story from my own personal experience.
And if someone, let's say someone is listening out there and they kind of feels like burned out from repeated over and over and over conflicts, how can rituals stop the cynicism?
I think that might be an unpopular opinion that I'm sharing. But if I continuously am part of conflicts, could be a really good point to ask yourself, what is my part in creating those conflicts all around me?
Mm-hmm.
How do I contribute to that? And what can I do differently to change this pattern? Because if it keeps erupting around you, there is a high likelihood that you're the common thread. Sorry to say.
I know that people can't see this if they're listening, but I have this thing that I always wear. Remember that if one finger is pointing towards others, you have three fingers pointing towards yourself, right?
Yeah, exactly. So you know me by now, I'm a huge, huge advocate for self-reflection and taking accountability for your part in any situation that you find yourself in.
Uh-huh.
And you can, therefore, one ritual should definitely be this kind of self-reflection. You can do this once a week. What showed up this week that really messed with me, or where I was in a conflict, that I couldn't repair, or that I didn't want to repair, and why was that? So that is the self-reflection is ritual number one.
Uh-huh.
And another ritual that you can try to solve for yourself is, not just reflect on your own part, but also to see, okay, what is one thing that I really appreciated this week?
Uh-huh.
Because that can shift your focus from all the negativity to the good things that have showed up in your work week as well, right? And then secondly, look at one regret. What is one thing that I did,
uh-huh,
that I shouldn't have done? And believe me, all of us have at least one regret for a week. Doesn't have to be an interpersonal.
At least one.
Doesn't have to be an interpersonal one, but could also be like, I regret that I didn't get this task done on time, or that I wasn't as focused as I wanted to be, or that I didn't bring as much energy as I wanted to. Could be any of those. And the third thing that I would always look at, what is one boundary I want to set for next week? Because boundaries are also a super important part of good conflict. And this doesn't take long, right? The first part, the act of self-reflection of what could be my part in conflict, that is not necessarily something that you need to do every week. And that is definitely something that's going to be a repetitive thing, and that's going to take more time. But those three questions, appreciation, regret, boundary, that doesn't take longer than 5 minutes. So it's really an easy, quick thing that it can incorporate into your work week. And it can shift first your own perspective, and then over time, if you then follow through on those things, and you potentially even feel bold enough to share that you're doing this, then it can seep into how the entire team approaches this, and maybe you infect people with doing the self-reflection, and then it can transform the entire team's response to conflict from defensiveness to responsiveness. And especially if you're a leader, you can really model this, and then you can stop like any of the silent poison trickling into your team.
And if we want to leave our listeners with, let's say, one thing to remember about repair rituals, what would that be?
I would say, don't wait for perfection. Rather, try out different things. Do them frequently, do them often, and try to figure out what works in your setting. And don't wait to do everything to hit the right spot every single time.
Yeah, Paulina. Yet another episode live in studio in Copenhagen. Thank you very much for coming. And before we round up, as always, please tell our listeners, where can they find you, company, Culture Code Foundation. Oh my God, that was so hard to say. Where can they find you and the Culture Code Foundation if they want to reach out and get good advice or hear more or about your services?
Well, for any companies out there or leaders that might want to work with us, you can always find us on LinkedIn, or you can find us on culturecodefoundation.com. And for anyone who just wants to get some free advice, maybe, subscribe to our podcast. Obviously, Lars and I both love to hear your personal stories. So you can always reach out to us either via LinkedIn or Instagram. We'll put all the social media handles in the show notes. And then Lars and I would love to hear your story. We can recount it here on the story, on the podcast. Or we would love to have you on the show live. We always do this anonymously. You can even get a cool pseudonym if you don't want to
share. If you want to be live on the podcast and just tell your story, that's perfectly okay with us as well.
Absolutely. We love that. And again, you can do this. We will do this in any form, way, or shape that works for you. So you can, we never share company names, but we can share your actual name. We can give you a cool pseudonym to protect your identity a little bit. But we always love to hear your personal stories on the show. So if you have something to share, just reach out to us.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Paulina, and to all our listeners. We'll talk or see you next week.
Thanks, everyone, and thanks, Lars, for having me in your studio.
You're welcome.